Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
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 Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, the show that confuses you with promises of movie talking by throwing in some TV shows here and there. I am Oscar, your leader, your host of the show, and with me today will be someone at some point as I get through this intro here. This is episode number 40, and we begin the new year by throwing you the first out of four top 10 lists that will wrap up 2017 once and for all, essentially. And today's show will be the best TV shows of 2017, part one. How that will work, real quick, I'll tell you. It'll work by, I have a guest that will start in as I finish his intro. He'll start in there. I already pre-recorded it. He, his name is Marcos, and he will be giving us his top 10 TV shows of the year. I chose him. He was here with us last year to do the top 10 2016 TV shows, and I think he always has a better and a different viewing TV set than I do, or than Ralph or Luke. And so I wanted him around again, and he did not disappoint in his more eclectic viewpoints of different shows that I never see or haven't seen yet. So I'm sure you'll enjoy that. So he'll be giving his top 10. I will be giving my 11 through 20. And the reason for that is for two reasons. One, I love cheating. I love adding extra to things that don't require extra. So that's my personal reason. And the other one is that Roth, it will be available for the top 10 TV shows, like his own choices. That'll be on next week for part two. And the reason I did that is because, like I said, I wanted different viewpoints. Luke couldn't do it. Roth can. And I know that having the three of us, or at least separated audios, because I couldn't get all three of us together in one room, I figured I'd just separate the two top tens in a row. That way you don't have like a four-hour podcast, you know what I'm saying? So that's what we'll be showing you starting today. Remember, you can find us online at otherpodcasts.com, where you can find everything we've ever done, all the bonus episodes, what else, top 10 stuff that we did from last year, top fives from the midway point of the year, and years as we do more of these. We're doing we're going to start doing our second marathon soon, but we have our previous animation marathon on there. We have tons of stuff going on there every single week. And usually we have a segment here where we talk about the stuff we've been watching recently or viewing habits. And we don't have anything this year. I'm not going to put anything out there. We're still catching up to movies. And real quick, the little disclaimer here, the reason we do all of these shows right after the new year, for several reasons. One, January is a slow month for reviewing movies. We're usually still catching up on the year previously. That's what I'm still doing, which is why the top 10 movies of 2017 will be coming out either after the TV top 10 or after the discoveries. But regardless, it's going to be one of the last ones. And the reason for that is because we're not critics. You know, per se, we're not the ones. Rotten Tomatoes does not take our suggestions or anything. So what we do is that we catch up to the movies as they come out, because a lot of people get screeners, you know, and stuff. They get the movies ahead of time for top 10 considerations, and we have to wait with the general public. You know, movies like The Phantom Thread, for example, I'm hoping to catch that one, especially. Other movies are barely coming out now, and like I, Tonya, and we would never be able to get them if we did our top 10 in December with any real authority, I feel. So there's that. And in that regard, you can also, speaking of bonus, as I mentioned earlier, this month's bonus for the month of January, how it works is that if you donate any amount, which you can find at otherpodcast.com, any amount to us, one time only, it could be anytime you want, in that month, you get that bonus that comes out for you only, just for you, you and other people like you. And if not, 5 months down the road, I will release it to the general public, but that's like 5 months later. So this month's bonus episode will be Paul Thomas Anderson's apparently awesome movie. Like, his movies are never awesome, right? The Phantom Thread. I think it's just Phantom Thread, though, but Phantom Thread starring Daniel Day-Lewis, I believe. So, and I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen the trailer. Don't know nothing about the movie except something about fashion, but that's really it. And the movie that's coming out for the general public that was missed on if you didn't donate 5 months ago is going to be Detroit. So, and that's a fun one. I reviewed that with Ralph. So hope you enjoyed that. It's coming out soon around the midway point of the month. And just to titillate your senses real quick before we actually begin our top 10 TV, I should say my top 10 to 20-ish for me, whatever. I'm going to say right here that our marathons, the next one we're going to do, Ralph and I have a real hankering for doing classics. But we're not going to just do classics, like just old movies, or necessarily choose a decade or a director or a movement. You know, there's a French movement and there's all those, you know, from the old Hollywood and system and the new Hollywood in the 70s. No, we're not going to do that exactly. We're going to do old, like originals. For example, like Dracula is an original that's been remade. But like we're talking about OGs. Now we're going behind. We're going like at least to the 60s, if not later than that. Just to give you an example of Dracula. We're not choosing Dracula. Maybe we will be. I don't know yet. I think Ralph and I will choose like five apiece. And I think that's what we're leaning towards right now. That's the number one contender as far as marathons go. And that's going to be coming out very soon. And since January is a dump month, as we make our top 10 and record them all, we're going to be thinking really hard about where to get those movies and provide hopefully some nice insights and some fun along the way. So without further ado, let us begin with our top 10 TV shows of 2017, part one. All right, let us begin with our first set of top 10s. And let me introduce my guest host here, Marcos. Say what's up.
Hey, what's up? Marcos Chavez over here.
Where are you from? You do stuff on the online too, right?
Yeah, I have a few things going online.
You want to plug them real quick before we get started?
Yeah, I'd love to plug real quick. I'm a little small-time blogger, reviewer on a site called The Game of Nerds.
Nice.
So I do some stuff there. I review TV shows, movies, comic books, and I get my own insight on what studios should do with certain film properties.
Yes, that's the stuff that I like reading more from your stuff.
Yeah, like recently I did a thing about how the MCU can still have rated R X-Men films by creating a secondary universe called Marvel Knights.
Marvel Knights, yeah. And, it sounds like Cinemax trying to market their Cinemax Knights. Like it's a seductive, not very great idea. Anyway, continue. it sounds worse than it is. I'm saying.
No, I mean it was just a name I thought of. But yeah. Currently I'm reviewing for that site, The Gifted, the Fox show.
Oh, I never heard.
It's you know how like we have Legion,
right? Yeah.
There's another X-Men property related TV show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was produced by Bryan Singer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he produces kind of them all, doesn't he?
Yeah. I don't think he's involved in Legion.
No, he's not in Legion, but like in a lot of them.
Okay, yeah. Most properties of X-Men, he's involved. But yeah, that's closer to his...
So what website was that again?
Just to thegameofnerds.com.
Sweet. That's what you mainly frequent?
Yeah, that and my Twitter account as well.
Oh, what is that?
It's La Suntan Superman.
Cool. All right, so this is a weird show. It's a weird format, so we usually do plug-in stuff at the end, but there's no end for you. You're like leading us into the middle, right?
Yes.
And in the middle, from there on, my other regular co-hosts... We'll come back and finish it off for us. You came back. You came to our show last year. You did a top 10 TV shows with me.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just write off a few of these to see if you remember them. You remember Shameless on there on that top 10?
Yes.
Do you remember The Flash?
Yes.
Are you regretting any of these?
I hate you.
You hate me? What about Love? The Night of, Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is good. Black Mirror. We all agreed on that one.
Yeah.
People versus OJ, that was a big show last year.
Mm-hmm.
American Crime, still haven't seen it. Daredevil, Luke Cage. Yeah, that was
a pretty solid year. I think last year was more superior than this year.
Oh, okay. That's good. That leads into my what I was going to ask you. What do you think of this year? But I guess it's less superior. So.
Yeah, it's not...
What was bad about it, exactly?
I think a lot of the shows that I was really looking forward to kind of let me down a bit.
Okay.
In all fairness, a lot of those shows I mentioned last year were so good and, you know, well done that it is really hard to follow up with another season.
True.
So, I mean, I can expect being disappointed, though, but
yeah.
I guess the amount of disappointment I felt was more than I anticipated.
Right. Well, I will say that it's just as good as any year. If anything, this is a better year for new shows than they are for returning shows. And that will reflect more on my top 10. But like I said, this is a weird format. So you're going to be giving us, Marcos, your top 10 TV shows of 2017. I will be giving, because, you know, we're doing two top 10 shows and I'm a greedy asshole. Mm-hmm. I am making my 11 through 20 with you. So I'll start with 20, you'll start with 10, and we'll work our way down, okay?
Okay.
So you're the guest, so you're going to go first. So what is your number 10 TV show of 2017?
Okay, mine would be the Stranger Things Season 2.
Number 10?
Yes.
Oof.
I know people. I know it's higher on most people's list.
Yeah.
But
No, it's good. I'm happy it's on there. So.
Yeah. But Season 2 of Stranger Things.
How come? Not how come number 10. How come it's on your list?
It's on the list? I was surprised how they kept the flow and, you know, the, I guess, like, the good quality of writing across Season 2.
True.
I think in today's standards, in today's, television world, finding a TV show that's consistently very good across all episodes, it's hard to find.
It is pretty hard to find. And so far, they've got two for two on that one, right?
Yeah. And they wrote Season 2 in the way where it didn't feel repetitive of the first season.
Yeah.
Which, off the bat, I tip my hat to that, to the writers, because they easily could have done Season 2, a rehash of Season 1.
That's true. Right. And I was kind of fearing that, and they didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways they did a little bit because it's still the same characters, but they didn't also.
I think when you reuse same characters, though, you expect a certain similar traits
to reappear. But you're right. They did some changes that were better than the shit I thought they were going to make.
Yeah, exactly. And I felt that, you know, they introduced the right amount of new characters to kind of give some new blood without, I guess, overshadowing the previous characters.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that. I didn't think of that. So that's your number 10, Stranger Things 2. It's called 2, which is interesting, because it's like a season. It's not a sequel to a movie, but it treats it like a sequel to a movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think part of it had to do with the, you know, how it takes place in the 80s, and most 80s films were always a part 2, regardless if it's a direct sequel or not.
Right, right. Okay, that makes sense. So that's your number 10. My number 20 is an FX show called The Americans, which, have you seen that show?
I have not seen The Americans, though, but I will say this. I love their promos because they're so well shot.
Oh, my God. FX promos are the best.
They are.
For Fargo, for The Americans, they're almost always really, really top-notch stuff.
FX promos are better than most movies.
Yeah. They really are. They tell you, like, all the exact tone of the show, almost.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also being fun about it.
Yeah.
So my favorite one from this year's promos of The Americans was when they're... the couple's walking out of the house, like, daytime. They're about to go get groceries. They're just talking. And then, like, two Russian airplanes fly by them. But it doesn't... They don't get scared by it. And that's it. It's just very simple.
Yeah.
And just tells you, like, the menace underneath the suburbia. Like, it just tells everything you need to know.
Yeah. I think studios, when they're hiring, like, new directors for their, like, tentpole films...
Yeah.
Just get the people who write the promos for FX shows.
Yeah, they should. So this season is not as great as last season before. If we were talking about season 4, I'm talking about now season 5, but season 4 of last year's was definitely closer to my top 10. So, but this one's only my top 20. So what I loved about this season, on top of the fact that the direction, the writing is still pretty much on par and stayed pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been better, but it's never been worse than the first season, which is like... why people started watching it in the first place. And I think a lot of people hate watching shows that have been going on this long because they just want to watch the new thing. And very few shows like Game of Thrones even stay that much popular after a few years. But this is one of the ones that are still making it, and I still love watching it, and the acting is always pretty fucking amazing. And this year they're continuing all these characters because the construct of, you know, this... Russian family living in America, pretending to be Americans, living next to the FBI agent guy. Like, that whole conceit, the whole gimmick of the show is by now gone. And now it's like, it's all about these characters and how are they going to reach the next level of growth and maturity while having to be a spy and a killer and running away from the cops and being, you know, disguised and shit. Like, it does that on top of everything else. Like, there's a whole thing about... A season ago, they told their daughter about their original past. You know, that they're Russians and shit. And you know, and meanwhile, the whole thing with the FBI has a whole big drama going on. And there's the whole Russian component about one of the moles there, and he has a whole side story in Russia himself, which you never get to see Russia. And it's all acted really well, and I totally recommend it. Keep watching it.
Is that the show where they kill off like the one of the main leads in season like two or three by hanging him?
Hanging him? No.
Or am I thinking about Homeland?
Yeah, you're thinking of Homeland.
God, I'm sorry.
I mean, they killed him in season three. They're in season six, so
okay.
Not a big spoiler. Don't worry about it. Yeah, they killed off the main guy in season three.
Okay. Sorry,
I'm like hanging. I don't remember any hanging.
But the Americans, so you but recommend it then?
I do, and it can get hardcore sometimes. It's not just spy shit. It can get hardcore.
Since they're on FX,
it's pretty fucked up.
They have more
like this whole thing about the main husband guy in previous seasons, I think the fourth or the third, he's tasked to basically befriend this teenage girl and mean befriend, like trying to like, because her dad is like a big NSA guy and he wants to get the information. And he's like, he's really grossed out about it because he's an old man hitting on this young 18, 17 year old or whatever. And like that's like kind of, you know, that's the kind of thing they go hardcore on. For example, there's one particular scene that I never stopped talking about is when they have to stuff a body in a, they crack all her bones, this body, and put her in a luggage to go out, walk out of the hotel. Well, nobody knows that there's a body in there, and they show the whole fucking thing. It's fucking crazy. But yeah, The Americans is fun. It's a lot of fun. So that's my number 20.
Okay.
What is your number 9?
Oh, for my number 9 for my list, that would be. Actually, Twin Peaks.
Oh, the revival?
Yeah. Or the Return.
Sorry.
The Return.
No,
yeah.
You're right. It's The Return.
Yeah.
Nice. You saw the whole thing?
I saw the whole thing. I saw the last two episodes twice.
to see if you understand it? Is that why?
I felt very autistic watching the last two episodes.
Right.
So I'm like...
Well, episode 8 is the weirdest one. Because the whole thing, it takes place in this weird...
Oh, yeah,
that
yeah.
That was a weird experimental
yeah.
episode.
That was, I was in with Lynch when Full Lynch.
Full Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's where he pretty much kicked, he fired Mark Frost, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And took over for a day. I have such, like, strong mixed feelings about this season.
I bet.
Should I call it a season, or is it an entirely new show?
It's well, they call it The Return because obviously they're not affiliated with the original network, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what part of the rights that he Lynch lost in season 2, which is why season 2 sucked so bad in 1991.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a part of it, even though they have to. It's kind of canon, but it's not. So, yeah, I think it's like a new show, but it's like a spin-off new show of the same characters.
Okay, yeah.
So call it whatever you want.
Because headcanon, I only count canon for like majority of season 2 episodes, but yeah, there's a few episodes that made no goddamn sense or terrible.
No, and it was just like filler episodes too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. So what are your mixed feelings on this show?
I love how the way he structured this show. Some people even call it a movie. It's an 18-hour
movie. It is a
movie.
He made it like a movie. He shot like episodes in different scenarios, like in different order because to him it was a movie essentially. Mm-hmm. Like he shot all the Twin Peaks stuff probably in one sitting. As opposed to coming back to it in another episode, for example. So,
And also, in a way, you can kind of see the show where the show doesn't really pick up as the return up until the waking up of Dale Cooper.
It's a bit of a spoiler. We can give it, I guess. It's okay.
Yeah, can we spoiler the show?
I feel like we can. You know, how about this? Yes, let's just start spoiling it. I'll just... a future Oscar will record the intro. I haven't done the intro yet for the show.
Okay.
I'll mention at the top that we're going to be spoiling some of the shit. So,
so that way
people know.
Got it.
So you can spoil.
Okay.
Just not
sure.
Like don't mention every single answer. Just give out what you have.
Yeah.
To. Yeah.
Because you can kind of treat episode. I guess like one.
But I love the Dougie stuff though.
It was so good.
I just kept seeing like how are they going to be convinced that he's not Dougie yet because he's not saying anything. How is he going to get out?
That's
of this?
That's like the joy and humor. I just love how
so
the characters and like just the world around him accept Dougie for being who he is.
Right.
So in my mind, there's two reasons for that. Dougie must have been just a horrible human being where him being brain dead is like a blessing from heaven. Or it just everybody is just so full of themselves. Something like that is just
trivial. He was a piece of shit. He was overweight and he was, you know, cheating on his wife and gambling.
Mm-hmm. He owed a lot of money to a lot of shady individuals.
Right.
He was jeopardizing his wife and his son.
Yeah, Tom Sizemore was weird.
He's open, isn't he?
He could not poison someone. And I kept thinking of him, Natural Born Killers. Man, he was killing hookers in that show, in that movie.
When I think about him in that show, I think about dandruff.
You think what?
Dandruff. Remember how Dougie kept rubbing his head because he saw dandruff?
God. Jesus. And he took it as some some sort of
sign.
A sign, yeah. Yeah, it's so weird.
I love all the new characters introduced.
Yeah.
I
love how everyone in Hollywood had to be in the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even people who I thought were dead.
Or like Michael Cera from one episode.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who's that one comedian's brother?
I need more.
Joe Belushi?
Oh, yeah. John Belushi.
John Belushi. Yeah. I thought he was dead. I was like, wait, did he CGI him?
No, that was the other guy.
I thought they were both dead.
The lesser Belushi.
But I thought they CGI him for the show.
No, why would they do that? I mean, they didn't CGI the singer guy. He just died. David Bowie. Right.
That's actually one point. Do you think that's one of the fewer moments where they should have CGI a character or
not? No, because a black kettle that brings out steam is still scarier than David Bowie. Like, the guy can do it. David Lynch can do whatever he wants. He can pull it off.
I love how he tied that back. That movie now makes more sense. Right? I love how, like,
right?
He pulled more stuff from Fire Walk With Me than
the show. Yeah.
Which, by the way, I thought was a bold and... Dude has some balls doing that.
Dude, he is amazing. He can make the most weirdest... You can make a living room scary, but just making you stare at it for a minute. And you'd be like, why am I freaked out right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like a loop, you know, when the mother, Laura Palmer's mother, is just watching that loop of the fight scene or something on TV?
Or when she, like, smashes that fucking...
What the fuck was
potato?
That? Yeah.
Was it potato or was it like a pumpkin? She was smashing vegetable.
Something.
Yeah. But to me, my biggest gripe with the show was we were into certain characters that I found more interesting than other characters. But he devoted more time to the slightly less interesting characters instead of the more interesting characters. Okay. Like, was it Richard Horn?
Richard Horn, the grandson of the main Horn.
Yeah, him.
Horn Plus.
I want more of him.
Oh, you wanted more of that asshole?
Yeah, because I thought, like...
The guy who's an evil asshole?
Exactly. Why? I wanted more of him.
Once he went over that kid, I'm like, I'm done with this guy.
I wanted him. No. I wanted the waitress daughter.
Amanda Seyfried?
Yeah, and I wanted her junkie boyfriend. I wanted to follow those three characters.
You wanted
more.
The people that have the less impact on Twin Peaks and this world of the Black Lodge more than the people that are involved with the Black Lodge.
It's because the thing is, so I know David Lynch likes writing his stories and his films kind of like, you know how, like, when a writer has a novel and he doesn't give a character...
No, I know. He writes them in, like, analogies and metaphors. Yeah. He'll write a character about him to make him a metaphor.
Exactly. And also, he doesn't feel you need to continue every character.
Right.
You don't deserve the answers.
Well, also, it looks like the show might continue because it does end in a way where, like, we're going to get more because it doesn't end satisfactorily. It doesn't end.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Would you agree? It ends with literally the lights shutting off.
Yeah. It ends with and Robin Williams' coat. Which year is it?
Oh, right, okay, yeah. And it ends with Laura Palmer doing her best thing. I forget her real name. The girl who plays Laura Palmer, her screaming, because she does amazing screams.
Yeah.
I'm
surprised she didn't do more like voiceover work.
I think she did.
Really?
I don't know, man. This show is so wonky. It's so bonkers. It's too original.
What do you think of them revisiting, the night before her death? And they recreate that scene.
Oh, I loved it. It suddenly became like a time travel movie. Like,
yeah, it kinda,
sure. I'm down with whatever.
I'm surprised Lynch pulled
that
off.
I'm not surprised by anything he does. Like, every episode, I did not know where it was going to go. And that's the beauty of that show, is that you can't predict that show. You can predict any of the other shows when I have our top 20s, 50s. We cannot predict that show. As you're watching it, you have no idea what the next scene is going to be.
Now, do you think that we were given episode 8 for a reason?
It's all for a reason, of course. The guy is not doing anything for no reason, except when he likes to gaze at women. But otherwise...
That's very true. Think we will get a season 4? Because to me, it's a hard... I find him having a hard time convincing Showtime, because that show is so expensive. You can just tell by watching
season. It's not that expensive, but it also didn't make him a lot of money.
Yeah.
We'll see. But this is not a review of Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm. But that's your number 9?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I think we said why you liked it. Let's find out. My number 19 is a Netflix original called Sense8. Have you seen that show yet?
I've seen it sporadically because my sister loves the first two seasons so goddamn much.
Just watch it already.
I've seen bits and pieces. I know it's that show.
I'm going to give you the description right now. Okay, so. For those who haven't seen it, I'm talking about season 2 technically, but I'll read the main description. A group of people around the world are suddenly linked mentally and must find a way to survive being hunted by those who see them as a threat to the world's order. And it's It's a great show. It's made by the Wachowski siblings, because they're both women now, I think.
Yes, I believe so.
They both did the turn. I know one did Lana. And then
the other one follow.
Yeah, follow. Stars Duna Bay, Jamie Clayton, Tina Desai, Tuppence Middleton, Max Reimelt, Miguel Angel Silvestri, Brian J. Smith. All of these actors are legit, like, international actors. They all speak English, though, because the show can only be so forward-thinking. And it's really forward-thinking. Like, they'll have basically a pot of different kinds of personalities and genders and gender biases and sexuality, whatever. This show is all out there. The intro kind of says it all, if you ever watch the musical intro for the show. And Sense8 is just basically about humanity coming together and essentially this gigantic, sprawling, like, show that jumps genres. One minute it could be a romance, one minute it could be a rom-com, and next minute it could be action-heavy, another minute it could be a horror movie. This thing changes like crazy, and I love how they pulled it off. It sucks that Netflix canceled it, but I hear that they're making one more episode, like, to finish it off.
Oh, it's like to wrap up all the
right, because they did a Christmas special last year, and then Sense8 Season 2 came out this year, and then once it came out, it got canceled. And I was, like, really bummed out about it, but it looks like they're making one more episode, like, another special to end it. Kind of like a British show sometimes they do.
Yeah, they usually do that, especially with, like, a Christmas special.
Right, Downton Abbey had that. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're going to do, and I hope it ends up well enough because I love these actors. They're all fucking amazing. And it's really easy to watch. All the formulas are there. It's just that they shove 8 formulas together, and that's what makes it interesting. So I love Sense8, but I didn't love it as much as the first season or the Christmas special, and like I said, I really got bummed out that it got canceled, so that's why it's so low on my list, but still 19. So that's my 19, and what is your number 8?
So for my number 8, it's a little animated show called Big Mouth.
Nice. Okay, we're talking about this off air, yeah.
Yes, just right before this, yes. It's a show created by Jordan Peele. And it stars...
I thought it was created by the guy who's the main guy. The main,
John Mulaney?
Main voice actor guy from The League.
Isn't
he co-creator?
He might be. I know that Jordan Peele is one of the creators.
Okay.
And it's starring Nick Knoll and...
Nick Kroll.
Nick Kroll, there you go. Yeah. And John Mulaney.
Okay, cool.
It's pretty much the best way I can describe it is... it's
an coming of age.
It's coming of age.
Extra coming.
Yes, it's an adult version of Fairly Odd Parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned that.
It's an anime show about kids with their hormones, and these kids have a thing called Hormone Monster. Who
they call them? Sex Monster.
Sex Monster. Yeah.
Sex Monster.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're pretty much representation of their sex drive.
Right. And how it has control over them. Yeah.
And I love how it's not just one character has one. You know, the female character has one of her own, too.
Oh, see, I only saw the first episode. I didn't know that. But okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, it's like a lot like Fairly Odd Parents. Everybody has their own fairies.
Okay.
So everybody has their own sex monster.
That's what she
said. And then certain characters can share a sex monster. Two can see the same monster.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a show that could have been really fucking just like, just cheesy as hell and just like, I guess, just raunchy to be. Just raunchy sex jokes, but I think they have a lot of good writing in it, and there's certain characters that you really do care for, and there's certain like subplots where we kind of like, I wonder how this ends. Like, one of my favorite subplots is you find out the one of the characters' mother is cheating on her dad, and you slowly kind of progress, realize that, you know, it's a character cheating, her mom is cheating on her dad with another woman. Mm-hmm. And then as the show progresses, you find out who this person is. Gotcha. And if you look back in the first episode, you find out, you know, the two kids were friends, how they saw two hot chicks making out.
Yeah.
Like, it loops back to that.
Okay. That's cool. I've only seen the first episode. I got turned off by it. It's just not my taste. But my brother swears by it, and I guess I like that subplot already, knowing from not knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Yeah,
and that's on Netflix.
And they treat, a lot of, like, the young characters just how I think they act and speak just like how we would have talked back when we were that young.
I will say that it did kind of have it was kind of genuine in that feeling. I didn't say quite the same things they said because obviously I'm my own person, but it did feel kind of genuine.
Yeah, it's stuff you can hear in your classroom being mentioned.
Right, exactly.
And
you have a friend that talked that way.
And I think we all know a character from that show or in our like middle school classroom.
Right, right. That's not, you can relate a little bit more. Yeah, that's a power of that movie or show. Sorry, for sure. That's Big Mouth.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, it has one of the best opening songs ever.
Oh, you liked it?
Okay. Yeah, I love that opening song. I actually downloaded it on my phone. It's my ringtone.
Oh, of course it is.
Well, everyone, check it out if you haven't seen it. It is one of the lesser-known Netflix shows, but they release like a show every week, so how can you keep up? My number, that's your number 8.
Yes.
My number 18 is another Netflix original fucking show that started this year. It's called Glow.
Oh, really?
Yes, it is. And let me read the description here. A look at the personal and professional lives of a group of women who perform for a wrestling organization in Los Angeles. Glow is, it stars Alison Brie. Amazing Alison Brie. She's never bad in anything I've ever seen her in. She's amazing in that one rom-com she did with, what's it called? Sleeping with Other People or something. I don't remember the name of it. She's great in Community. Fucking awesome in Mad Men. And here she is in this one. And it stars also Marc Maron.
Yes.
I've never
him.
Liked Marc Maron.
Really?
But
before this?
He's amazing in this in the show. He's a perfect amount of skeezy ball and weasel and like this, you know, kind of like a director wannabe guy. So good. He plays it so good.
I agree. Like, I love how it's... I've seen the show as well, and it's on my personal list, too.
Nice. We'll get to that one.
Yes.
But, yeah. I just love that. It's a comedy, but it's a drama. So it's a dramedy, I guess. And it's about these lives of these women. It's basically the whole first season is a setup to the eventuality of GLOW, which stands for a Gorgeous
Ladies of Wrestling. Yeah.
Right. And... it kind of brings in that whole wrestling mentality that we know and maybe are sick of now, or maybe I know you like wrestling, but I don't. And but it's like it brings in that mentality, but it's like the beginnings of it. And they do it with this spin, and they have these amazing cast of these women. And I know that one of the co-creators is the Jenji Cohen, right? From Orange Is the New Black and Weeds.
I believe so. I believe most Netflix shows share like. A table of producers. It wouldn't surprise me considering like the strong leads in the show being females.
Yeah, she's not the main star, but a lot of these writers are definitely women writers too, and you can feel that in the way that like the show opens with a lot of like an affair and all these subplots of drama, of course.
Certain characters
and then you think that the whole plot of that will reach through the whole season, and no, they kind of solve it right then and there. They kind of bring it to your face in that first episode that you see it, or the next episode that you see it in, and they immediately make that into the next thing they have to get through. And they don't really stall for time, as far as I saw in character development. And I love that episode where they have to do the fundraising. I love that episode a lot. The thing with the daughter, with Marc Maron's kid, that was all good. And I love the hell out of it. It's a really well written show, well acted. And Alison Brie, I just love her. I want her in all my movies. So that's Glow. And I know we'll get to it when you get to your number, whatever it is. That's my number 18. What is your number 7?
My number 7 would be season 2 of Love.
Season 2 of Love. Okay, nice.
Yeah. There was actually
that's a change because you didn't have that when you started.
Yeah, it was because for the longest time, it was a tie between Love and Easy.
I haven't seen Easy yet.
I think Easy is great, but I think because I've seen the first season of Love, I had more attachment to these characters. So I think that's why I picked Love over Easy.
Yeah, you had Love on your top 10 last year.
Yeah. And season 2, I thought season 2 did what a lot of shows don't do. It capitalizes on the events of the first season really well in a very natural way.
I would say I love season 2 of Love more than season 1. Because I saw it on your recommendation. I binged it. And I love season 2 more than 1 even. But
And I thought that where these characters ended up in season 2 made a lot of, it made sense. It was a very natural flow to it. Nothing felt forced. And I love the subplot of him just trying to write that story about the mountain in season 2.
Oh my God, that's right.
That was painfully to watch, and just poor writer.
That was bad.
Getting his one opportunity taken away from him.
Right, but he's such a dick. He doesn't deserve her. he's an asshole.
No, but
he's like this weird self-flagellation guy. Oh God, he reminds me of someone. That's the worst part about it. Anyway,
well, they're both worse.
Both in bad places, but she's in a better place. She's actually trying. He's just like willing to bring her down with
him. Yeah, they do a reverse almost in season 2, but that last episode. Was holy shit because a spoiler that the guy was in like the room their apartment while they were making out.
Yeah, I remember.
I was I was hoping for like some kind of big like fight or something.
Yeah,
come from it, but nothing happened, which surprised Halloween, which I thought was even more funny.
Yeah, no, I totally loved it, and it's really I love what's her name.
Oh, Gillian Jacobs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I love her. She's really great. She's been doing some really good acting lately.
I wish she did more stuff, though.
Yeah. She did that one stand-up comedy movie. She played like a she played like a starving comedian actress. I forget that movie with Jordan Peele.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like the more, it's more of a lighthearted film for him, Jordan Peele.
Yes, definitely. But she's like the main star in that movie.
She kind of
takes the role. She kind of takes the reins in that movie.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, she's really good in that. So that's your number 7.
Yes.
My number 17 is a Showtime show. I know, right? Showtime. What the hell? It's called Homeland. It's another old show that no one watches anymore. I swear to God, every time I mention Homeland to people, people are like, that show's still on? I'm like, yes! And it's still just as good. You guys suck. Just because it's season 6. It is season 6. It's an old show now. Yeah. By movie standards, it might as well be an 80-year-old man now. But it's still so good. And much like The Americans were the original gimmick of it, you know, like the guy who got hanged that you mentioned, mm-hmm. he did get hanged in season 3.
Yeah.
That's how he died. Like, when that guy died in season 3, that ends the gimmick of the show. But they continue it. And the way they continue it by updating with today's political climate, at least the political climate of the year that they're in at the time. And they write to that. And it, before you know it, it becomes a nice political statement that kind of wraps up a lot of today's stuff with the events of the drama and the explosions of the season of Homeland. And they do the same thing here. The best thing about Homeland this season, I almost made it, I wanted this higher, but it's so much good TV this year that I couldn't put it higher, is that Homeland has, so they wrote this before the election, okay. before the 2016 election, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they did anyway. They have the Hillary-esque person, the Hillary left-wing you know, with stars in her eyes, like a different version of Hillary, but it's a woman president
yeah.
that's getting, she's a president-elect. Mm-hmm. And the way they ended with her, because there's a lot of shit going on with the CIA, and she hates the CIA, this president, and she wants to take down all this spy stuff. She wants to stop the war in Iraq. She's doing all this stuff that me as a person kind of agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the thing, after all is said and done, after the dust settles, after all these terrorists were stopped, or some of them weren't, or whatever, which I won't spoil really, you find out that it's much worse to have her around. And the way the movie ends, the show ends, the season ends, sorry, season 6, it ends in such a way where they could go anywhere with the next season if they do create one. But furthermore, it's so dark that I almost wish she was as incompetent as Trump is.
Really?
Yeah, because of the way the whole spy terrorist world lives, and it kind of breaks her down in a certain way, this president-elect woman,
mm-hmm.
that it takes out all the hope in her eye is gone, and all you have remaining is a woman who's gonna scorch the earth at this point. And I guess that's saying too much, maybe, but it's such a good ending. It's such a dark ending, but I loved it, and it surprised me because I did not see that coming. And obviously, the acting is still just as fucking good as it's ever been. You know, I'm gonna read a description. Read the thing here. Oh man, I can't read this. This is like from first season. A bipolar CIA operative becomes convinced a prisoner of war has been turned by Al-Qaeda and is planning to carry out a terrorist attack on American soil. It's like the first season stuff. Doesn't give me the new season stuff, but whatever. It's fine. It stars Claire Danes, and she's still the best thing about the show. And Mandy Patinkin plays her, like her boss, sort of boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good. And it's made by the guys who did 24.
Oh,
it's like a serious version of 24. Like a real one, I mean. So that's
does it have multiple screen splitting?
No. I think there's maybe one time once, but no. No timer either.
Okay.
So that's Homeland, my number 17. It's unfortunate that people are not watching it, but it's still just as good. So what's your number 6?
It would be Legion.
Legion.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
That's going to make my top 10 somewhere.
Yes.
All right. Tell me.
So, Legion is the, I believe I mentioned, was Legion on my last year show list?
No, I think it's only came out this year.
Yeah, you're right, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's just the first season.
Sorry, I got my year mixed up. But yeah, I love the show so much. It takes, you know, all the best qualities from, like, you know, a very strange, abstract comic book story and, mm-hmm. you know, capitalize on that. And, you know, just like the way the show was shot, the format, the characters, everything, it's like a breath of fresh air. You know, it easily could have been like, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It easily could have been like, you know,
oh my God,
The
right?
Gifted.
I was so worried.
Or like, even like, The Flash.
Right.
But no, it became something different. It's closer to Fargo than it is to like.
Well, it's made by the guy who did Fargo.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And, you know, Noah Hawley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And just like, And I love how it did the whole concept of being timeless way better than Gotham ever could have.
Oh my God, right? Because I don't know, I still don't know what decade they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see a smartphone, and I'm like, even then, I'm still not sure.
Yeah. And then like, you have a character who has a flashback, even though he's dressed in attire that predates his parents' attires by decades.
70s or something. Yeah.
And there's like a 24-inch smart TV.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have no idea where they're in.
Mm-hmm. But they do that so well. Yeah. And you just kind of submerge yourself into that world and you accept these, you know, things happening.
Totally agree.
And I just love the twists and turns. It does the twists and turns better than most films could.
Right.
Opinion. Yeah.
Or like they'll do like a twist and turn in one episode that usually takes an entire season of other
show. To establish. Or build up to.
And they do it so well, like, ooh, with this yellow man guy and the, who's the girl who plays the alter ego? Aubrey Plaza. She's the best thing in the show, I think. She does like crazy good acting, like out of the over the top, mm-hmm. but not over the top because it makes sense. When you watch it, it will make sense.
Yeah. And I love how freaky that character is.
It's so freaky. I love how they film her, how evil she can be, mm-hmm. and yet funny.
You should hate the character, but you root for that character more than anybody else in the show.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. And I just love how, unfortunately, I think towards the second half, like mm-hmm. the last three episodes, it kind of falls back in the X-Men because they showed like the X-Men symbol that referenced his dad, sort of, but not really.
Yeah, maybe it's part of the contract. Like, he had to show this stuff. Like, he had to set up the next whatever they want
to
show.
Yeah, or I think they had
to
mention
the best way they could
to
do
keep
it.
The rights, I guess, or maybe. Some weird thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
But to be honest with you, like, outside of, like, his dad and, like, the little memory of, like, the wheelchair.
I've never been scared of a little kid's comic book thing. You know, that mean little kid?
Yeah.
That was scary.
Sorry. Oh, dude, that was terrifying.
That was terrifying, yeah.
And the fact... Oh, God.
So you were saying, I was interrupting you.
No, you're fine. But I think most people wouldn't... If you told somebody who'd never seen, like, an X-Men film to watch this show, they wouldn't even consider it an X-Men show.
No, never.
Mm.
It's more like a Stanley Kubrick One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest version of an X-Men show. Mm. It's crazy.
And I think this show broke the door for young artists to do stuff with the X-Men property. Like, that's why we're having New Mutants.
I hope so.
Unfortunately, that's now been canceled.
I heard.
Yeah,
I heard.
Because Disney, they're going to say, hey, you can't do creative stuff anymore. Yeah. But we at least have Legion Season 2, and we have New Mutants.
Yeah. I hope Noah Hawley keeps on Legion forever, because I want him to do more of this.
I think that falls under a TV deal, because, you know, I'm sure once...
I know, I'm saying. I hope he keeps it, though. Yeah. I hope to let him keep it. But, I hope it doesn't turn into a Frank Darabont to The Walking Dead situation.
I hope not.
I hope, because that would suck. That would really suck.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I had a slight little... I definitely raised an eyebrow on the last shot of the season.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember offhand right now, but...
It was interesting, but I guess maybe because I'm an X-Men fan, it reminded me...
Oh, you're thinking about the ball thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It reminded me of X-Men Evolution, so I kind of cringed a bit.
It did look a little hammy, but yeah, it's fine. I'm going with it.
Yeah.
Because by then, that movie already... It already gave my confidence. Like, I'll watch whatever it's going to do, because...
I'm just trying to think that... Do you think, going forward, the show would be more surreal, or do you think it'll be tame? Because the show's only surreal
because
of its mental state.
Part of season one's thesis is this mental illness thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the where it came from, what's stopping him, this main character, who is really powerful and doesn't really know it, and how is he going to get over it? I feel like season two, as we progress, it'll probably get more constructive. It'll probably seem more palatable. Like, we'll understand more. It won't be confusing because the main character isn't as confused.
Mm-hmm.
He still has to fight his own demons, but the way it ends, it feels like he has won a big victory in a way,
mm-hmm.
Which made him so confused. And he was only confused because we were confused as audiences, or like keeping up was hard because he was keeping up. You know, he was hard at keeping up too. He didn't understand what was going on. He didn't know he had a leech on him,
mm-hmm.
but a mental leech. It was so confusing. But I think it'll be probably more palatable. But I think the Art Deco and like the crazy story, like the way they kind of like flip flopped stories around, I think will make it probably just as good, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm hoping. That's my hope.
Yeah, same here. Definitely agree with everything you said.
So that's Legion.
Yes.
That's your number, what, 6?
Yes.
All right, my number 6 is a show that everyone talked about. It's Hulu's original show called The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
Set in a dystopian future, a woman is forced to live as a concubine under a fundamentalist theocratic dictatorship.
Ooh.
I know, right? That's some $5 word right there.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Right. Stars Elizabeth Moss, who is the only reason, almost almost the main reason why this is on my list, by the way. Ivan Strahovski, sorry, Joseph Fiennes, Max Minghella, who's the girl? Samira Wiley from Orange is the New Black. And Alexis Bledel is in the show, too, as another concubine. Margaret Atwood wrote the original novel, which is based on. The Handmaid's Tale is probably, I mean, a lot of people are calling it the most fucked up or the most depressed, the most depressing show of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the themes definitely are, but I think, I don't know, I think I've seen more fucked up. I think Legion is pretty fucked up, honestly.
Compared to that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe yes, maybe no. This show is the main thing it has going for it, other than this weird dystopian, because I love dystopian futures. Everyone loves that shit. That's why it's on the critics list. But on top of doing it really well, and also not really knowing where it's going to go, and even though it did fuck up some of those surprises involving the husband and some of the past stuff, which I didn't think I didn't think to handle really well, Elizabeth Moss carries the movie, but just her sheer will of performance, because she is like she's a fucking monster. She is the next Meryl Streep, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care how much Scientology she's got going on. Elizabeth Moss kills it in this fucking show, and she sells every bit of agony and torment over the loss of her kid, from doing that, from having to fuck this guy in his family household and not being able to get pregnant, and she's being blamed for that, like she has control over fucking hormones. It's just really a fucked up show. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Okay. It's are you going to see it?
yes, because I have so many friends who tell me on the regular to watch the show.
Yeah.
And I just haven't. I don't know why.
Because we know how fucked up you are, and you'll love it. That may be it.
Yeah, I think because maybe originally it reminded me so much of the man in the High Castle.
Oh my! I've only seen the first three episodes of that, mm-hmm. and never finished it. But I hear it's good.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's another weird dystopian, like a different reality, alternative timeline. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, I want to see that eventually too. It's on Amazon, right? So mm-hmm. I'll eventually watch that. But this is on Hulu, and one of the great things about this particular thing that I think will be great in the future, if hopefully Netflix does it or some other show, maybe HBO. No, they don't have to, but
mm-hmm.
Is that the way they release the show is that they release the first three episodes
mm-hmm.
and then they release the next ones on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So it's like the first ones get you hooked
mm-hmm.
and then you start watching on a weekly basis. And I think that's a better format than just straight binging, because Netflix just drops shows and I hate that shit. Because I can't keep up. I want to see so many things. And even if I want to see just once a month, I don't want to go by binging everything. Mm-hmm. I don't binge most things. Some shows are fine for that, but not most, in my opinion. And Handmaid's Tale is not one you want to binge, as far as my opinion goes. But yeah, it's a good show. It's fucked up, like I said. So if you like high drama, watch it. But it doesn't have much levity. No funny business at all in the show. But that's my number 16. And I think we're going to take a quick break because, mm-hmm. you know, we need to gargle some water for the next voice stuff here. So we'll come back right after this, guys. All right, we are back. Marcos, why don't you give me your number 5 there, Chief?
Yeah, my number 5 is Punisher.
Oh, having not seen it.
It's the spinoff of Daredevil.
True, yes.
Yes. And I was really surprised how well the show was. They could have gone this show a few ways. They could have been just a straight up, you know, a rehash of, you know, stuff we've seen with, you know, Thomas Jane Punisher or mm-hmm. Ray Stevenson's Punisher.
That was a crazy one.
Yeah. Or just, you know, a generally just revenge story. But
true.
They handled the character Frank Castle so well, and also I love the whole theme of like PTSD, and I thought they did a great interpretation.
Oh, is that like a main thing in this movie?
Yes, okay. Yes. There's a handful of characters who had that issue, different variations though, and not the same for everybody.
Well, not two people are alike.
Yeah, and just like the concept of like loss and what that does to a person is just so well spelled out in this show. Like there's two characters, Frank Castle and Micro, and they both experienced very similar tragedies in their life. And it's interesting seeing how they both took the bad things in life and how they geared them to be these different people. I mean, while they work together, though, they're very different individuals. You know, one's like a soldier and the other one is a, you know, a journalist analyst.
Okay.
And, you know, they team up because they both went through the same, you know, bullshit. Or they lost their family from pretty much. And it's just a gritty realism to, like, superhero shows, which is a nice breath of fresh air. I know people say Arrow is gritty and realistic. No.
I saw a few episodes of Arrow the first season, and I thought it was okay, but I didn't think it was anything special.
Yeah. I think Punisher gives you that, you know, like, you know, boots on the ground grittiness to a
good
comic book
See,
show.
See, I would hope it go for a more personal route than that.
Yeah. Speaking of personal, I just love how all these characters are, like, connected to Frank Castle in different ways. There's no character that isn't connected to him somehow, and I love that.
You mean, like,
that.
In his backstory, or are you talking about thematically?
Backstory, thematically, and just, like, you know, how they can help him move forward to his objective.
And make him grow.
Exactly.
That's how a show should be, yeah.
The villain, and, you know, if you read the comic books, you kind of know this guy ends up being this particular character.
I don't know anything about Punisher comics.
So,
yeah. But okay.
So unfortunately, because it does share a villain from Warzone. So people who've seen Warzone and love Warzone, you're kind of spoiling who the villain is once you get a name drop.
Yeah.
But I just love how, you know, because
it's too bad they're canceled now.
Punisher's not canceled.
I thought Netflix can't do any more Marvel shows anymore because of the Disney thing.
No, from my understanding is I think the Netflix property are safe.
Defenders are safe and all.
Yeah, as long as the deal was made pre-Disney breaking away from.
Okay.
And I think Daredevil just made the cusps of that. It barely
made that.
Yeah.
Oh,
and also, cool. I think even because he was in Daredevil season 2, they could argue that he technically was part of that deal.
Right. Okay.
But,
Oh, well then, hey, maybe I'll catch up to it. Because one of the reasons I didn't watch it, on top of, you know, so many shows to watch, is that I was like, oh, I heard about this deal and they're not going to make it anymore. I'm like, oh, I won't watch it then. Because that way I don't, like, have a lingering thing about season 2 that will never happen.
Yeah, I think Disney deep down knows that, hey, we have a good thing with Marvel. I mean, with Netflix, so let's not, you know.
Well, I was also just getting any excuse not to watch a show that I don't have to. Because so much good TV. I've not seen as many shows that I want to see as the ones I've seen. Mm-hmm. So, like, just can't keep up. Fucking Netflix, man. They should stop.
Yeah, they do.
Coming out with 80 new movies next year. Or this year, technically, when this comes out. 2018.
Bright 3.
No, I'm saying
Bright
4. I haven't seen Bright yet. But
Bright 7.
I heard Bright was awful, but I haven't seen it yet.
We'll talk about it later.
Maybe, yeah. But in 2018, there are 80 new movies that are not studio movies. They're not coming in theaters. I mean, some of them won't probably. But, like, that's insane. On top of all the Paramounts and Universals, and I can't keep up with any of this. It's fucking crazy. First it was TV, now it's movies. Anyway, that's your number 5. Now I'm just bitching about the content. This is like a first world problem right here. Number 5 is, the Punisher or is it just Punisher?
I think Punisher.
Okay. My number 5 is a miniseries, so it's a one and done show.
Okay.
It's called The Defiant Ones. It's on HBO. Have you seen it?
I heard of it. I've seen the trailer and I heard of it.
It's a documentary miniseries called The Defiant Ones. Examines the partnership between Jimmy Iovine, I can't fucking say his name, and Dr. Dre. One the son of a Brooklyn longshoreman, the other straight out of Compton, and their leading roles in a chain of transformative events in contemporary culture. It talks about these two people in a very nice back and forth way, and it's, written and directed by Alan Hughes, one of the Hughes brothers, the guys who did From Hell and The Book of Eli. What was their main one? Menace Society, Dead Presidents. I love Dead Presidents. So if you've seen those movies, same director, one of them, wrote and directed this entire series. And it talks about, like, the first rapper that became a billionaire, sold the Beats thing. Mm-hmm. But that isn't the hook of it. The hook of it is how these people were instrumental from the 60s, you know, with Iovine and with Dr. Dre, of course, when he started bringing these people in, like Eminem and all this, making all of the pop culture, what makes your pop culture life in the form of music, and some in movies and other stuff, but mainly in music, how these people are in your life, whether you like them or not. Like, they have either created or supplanted your favorite musician in some form or another, at least one of them. Like, you can hate Eminem, but if you love fucking, you know, I can't think of an Marilyn Manson, these guys still made both. Like, both of them came from that. Like, the controversy that these people generated from these artists that were, you know, unique and whatever, like Eminem, Manson, all those people, Black Eyed Peas too. Then it's like they're a part of our culture footprint in a way that no one really – I didn't think about until I saw this documentary. And it's really well made. And obviously the whole documentary series, like four episodes, it's just about them too. And it switches back and forth. Starts off pretty much with grassroots, how they started. And you get a lot of information that you didn't know from other movies or other books that you didn't get to. All the interviews are from today, from these people that are still alive, of course. And all the way leading up to the beat sale and where they're going to go from there. And it's just really good. It's a really good documentary. Really well written. The editing is the best thing about this show. How they go back and forth and how they intersperse voiceover with the footage that they brought from the 90s or whatever. So, totally loved it. You should watch it.
You say it's one of this year's best documentaries?
Yes. I mean, as far as documentary shows.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, this one in Vietnam probably...
Oh, the one that came out a few months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, top two, for sure. I heard great about that.
That's really good. Still haven't finished Vietnam, though, but it's really good so far. So that's the Defiant Ones, and that's on HBO Now or HBO Go. Your number four.
My number four is... Glow.
Nice. Yes. Okay, I already said my piece, so you just say yours.
Oh, man. Okay, first of all, you know, full disclosure, I'm a big wrestling fan.
Right.
I am a hardcore...
We didn't get that at all.
...wrestling junkie. I've been a junkie since I was eight. So,
right.
When I heard a show about the gorgeous ladies wrestling, I flipped my shit.
Did you see the OG of this?
No. Okay. I heard of it. It was mentioned, you know, variously across, you know, other wrestling programs. Right. But I never seen it, though, because it's like an 80s show.
They probably reference it.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's not even produced by the major wrestling company, so it's kind of hard to find footage of it. Outside, like, you know, the internets, I guess.
Right.
But when I heard the show was coming out, I went back and I revisited certain episodes. And from what I saw and from what I read, the show is loosely based on, you know, that same wrestling company. But you know, even though it's loosely based on it, from my opinion, it captures the spirit and heart and soul of what it takes to be a professional wrestler and run a wrestling show.
Nice.
And okay. I also love the two leads. I love how, you know, Mark Merrill is such a pessimistic asshole, and the other lead is she's just so optimistic and hopeful,
but also desperate.
Yes,
very desperate. She's hungry.
Yes, while Mark
she'll
Merrill
do a lot.
Couldn't give two shits.
She'll do a lot to eat and get some money, like including making this shit work.
Yeah, and I love how they're a perfect parallel from each other.
True. I like the best friend that comes in eventually.
Yeah,
the soap opera actress.
Oh, one of my best, like one of my favorite moments, I think, this season is when the two chicks take her out to a wrestling show, like a real wrestling,
and she falls in love with it.
Yeah, and it clicks in her head. It's a soap opera.
It's a soap opera. Yeah, right.
I love that. Like me personally, when I take a friend to a wrestling show and they get that same reaction, I live for shit like that.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And I love how they incorporate real wrestlers in the show. They don't, hey, you know, look at this big muscle guy. They kind of spread a little bit across the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they all work perfectly.
And I love how they, also, I never mentioned this and when I mentioned it as my number, whatever it was, 18, that it has this nice idea of how we need a villain in every story and they make her into the villain. It's so good.
Yeah.
I love how they just...
Yeah.
Go with that, and they push that, and they need a villain more than the hero. And for this,
because the villain makes a show,
and the villain makes a show, right? Yeah. It makes the hero look good.
And I love how they do the whole like they'll cut certain character storylines because the show just won't make sense,
right?
And you know, you never see that,
yeah.
Which I thought was great too.
That was good. So that's Glow. That's your number four.
Yes,
pretty high up there, Chief. My number three. Sorry, not my number three. My number 13. Can't fuck that up again. Oh no, wait, it's not my number 13. It's my number 14. Sorry. My number 14 is Master of None, which is another Netflix show. Netflix is dominating everything here. Have you seen this show?
I have not, but I've been recommended by my friend Dan to watch this show.
Dan,
so hardcore,
I like your style, because Dan is good. Dan is right. It stars as a show by Aziz Ansari, which I think he created it, wrote a lot of the episodes. It's the personal and professional life of Dev, a 30-year-old actor in New York. So it's a very New York-heavy kind of a comedy show, but it's also kind of a variety show. Not a variety, not sketch either, because every episode I mean, there is a through line to them, mm-hmm. but it isn't much. It's not plot heavy at all. An episode could just be, most episodes are one-offs about ideas or about how parents are as a millennium, you know, New Yorker. And you would think that having all of these tropes about, you know, this one man and single man living in New York, you think you've seen it all, and you have, and they play with that, but they do it in such a unique, different way, usually within like a beautiful setting or a beautifully shot or beautifully written script, that it makes you feel like you're watching something original, even though you've seen the New York shit all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that's its main power. And the thing I'm going to say to you to recommend it is, I'm just going to mention this one episode. Forget the name of it. I think it was halfway through. By the way, every episode is like 25 minutes long. Mm-hmm. It's about it takes place in New York, and it's about the different people in New York. And what it is, it follows conversation after conversation as they pass each other by. It'll start off with like deaf people, and they start like, you know, how deaf people, you know, really, you know, they can swear like sailors like we do, and how that one person in a shopping in a mall, you know, she says the word cunt or something like that, and mentions like, she's mentioning her pussy all the time, right, and her vagina, and then this mother comes up like, my children are deaf, they can read what you're saying, and then it goes from there, and they mention a movie that they want to see, a premiere of a big movie, and then from there goes to a cab driver, and the cab driver, you know, how he can't get laid, but he's getting his, and he still doesn't really get laid, but he finds and meets a girl because of this one act he does. And from there, it goes to, and it ends at the same place that where it was going to start, which is Dev, as Nathan Sarr's character, was excited for this movie. Didn't want to spoil anything. And he gets spoiled by, the cab driver that was sitting next to him gets spoiled on this movie. And it's like this long, like, run around of New York in one day. And it shows all the different people from the cab drivers, the Somalian cab drivers, to the deaf people, to the Mexicans and the harlots, whatever. It's really good. And it's such a great, really, really amazingly written show. And season two, I think, might be better than season one. It has this, he plays like a TV host for a cupcake show on one of those food networks. And he kind of hates it. He wants to start a new one. And then, and this is the interesting thing, is that he is starting a new show with this guy, this mega producer guy. Mm-hmm. And he finds out halfway through making it that the guy is controversial as fuck. Like, being with him is toxic because allegations come out with him sexually harassing people. And this season came out months before all this heavier stuff came out. Months before the Harvey Weinstein thing.
Do you think that was like kind of like a little Seth MacFarlane-y? You know what he does?
Might know that shit too, and probably made a script about it, because one of the main plots of the season.
You have me. I'm gonna start watching the show tonight.
Yeah, watch it. It's really good.
Oh, wow,
I recommend it. Master of None is on Netflix. That's my number 14, and we're on to number three.
Mine would be Preacher.
Oh, I haven't seen that show. Still haven't seen it.
Yes, it's a show produced by Seth Rogen, starring Dominic Cooper.
He's a big Rogen's a big Preacher fan.
Yeah, he's a big comic book guy overall, I think. It seems like it. Not like the mainstream comic books, but I think like he's a fan of like the independent comics.
Okay, cool.
Definitely. But yeah, I was kind of curious on how they would treat this season, considering how like the last season kind of like... The last season was a prequel to like the first book, roughly.
Okay.
Yeah, so season two is more or less the first book.
Oh, really? Because yeah. I bought the first book. I haven't read it yet. Mm-hmm. I have not read anything. So don't read it, you're saying. Maybe watch the first season first?
Yeah. and, you know, what they do is it's the same format, same style, with how in the first season we just were given this one small town and like a handful location. Even though we're giving New Orleans, you would think it'd be a big spectacle thing. It still relatively feels like a small show, and we have a small cast too. And I like the villain that we're introduced. My only gripe is we're given a character across, I think the first season, this gunslinger character, mm-hmm. and they kind of take care of him fairly easily, and I was really disappointed by that.
Okay.
I was like, you know, he was kind of, imagine if Darth Vader got taken down the first 5 minutes of Empire Strikes Back. I think they did that so we can get to another villain, and he's just as charismatic and very interesting, but it kind of sucks how, like, they kind of have one villain just for the sake of another one.
Okay.
Very similar to Luke Cage, I guess.
Oh, okay. I hear you.
Yeah. Again, I like the new villain, but it's just like, we were given so much time with the old villain, I guess. Yeah. He's not even a villain, he was just a guy on a mission to be the, take down Preacher.
I mean, shit, I don't know anything about the show.
But anyways. I also love the, what he did with Cassidy, his best friend's a vampire, a 400-year-old vampire.
Cassidy is a guy or a girl?
A guy.
See, I can never tell her that name. I thought it was a girl.
And, oh my God, they gave him such great time and development in this season. I was in like, I think...
This is season three or two?
Two.
Okay.
You could argue season two was a Cassidy show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love when they do that. Yeah.
They give him a great subplot with his son, and the way they handled that was great. And I enjoyed some of the... It still kept the humor, but it wasn't as funny as the first season, I guess, in my opinion, at least.
Okay. I didn't even know it was comedic.
It sprinkled across. It's like a dark humor.
Okay.
Yeah. But it does slow down a little bit towards the middle, but it picks up towards the end again.
Okay.
Again, although the other issue I had was it does end in similar note to the first season, but it's just about perils, I guess. But the thing is, like, most of the season two was so good, the ending was just fine to me. There is a major death, which to me was like, that took balls to do. I respect the writers for that.
I love when they do that.
Yeah, I was awesome. Like, wow. And also...
Like the Ned Stark?
One of the leagues does take, you know...
Nice.
Take a hit. But again, we're giving a handful of new characters, and I love those characters so much. And I think... At first, I thought New Orleans would have handicapped the show because it was like a Western show the first season, you know?
I thought it was Western, yeah. I've only seen the promos.
But New Orleans kind of fits, I guess, where these characters are going and the theme of the show. And, you know, I just thought that even though New Orleans was, in my opinion, a random choice, it fit well with season two.
I'm going to watch it. It's one of my to-do lists. It's not my to-do. It's been there since the first season came out.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't seen it.
It's only 8 episodes, so...
I know, but just on top of everything, you know.
No.
Eventually, I will watch it because I want to see it. It seems like right up my alley, too. So that's, what's it called again?
Preacher.
Preacher. That's on...
AMC.
AMC? Really?
Yeah.
It's AMC. I thought it was FX.
No, a lot of people think that it's not AMC.
They're both interchangeable, yeah. Almost.
So the way it works, Preacher kind of takes over for Walking Dead when Walking Dead is off the air.
I thought that was the other Walking Dead show that takes over for the Walking Dead.
Oh, which one?
The new one, the one that takes
place. Oh, I keep thinking about the web show they
have. Fear of the Walking Dead.
Oh, I kept thinking about the web show.
Or Badlands, or, yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
I don't care anymore.
I don't.
Who cares about the Walking Dead?
They're the punching bag of TV. The one wants just to take a lick. So that's your number?
That was three.
My number 13 is a show... Jesus Christ, another Netflix, but it's my last Netflix show
list
because fuck you have like 50 too. Anyway, this is a Netflix show called, it's a new one too,
mm-hmm.
It's called Dear White People. And let me read the description here. At a predominantly white Ivy League college, a diverse group of students navigate various forms of racial and other types of discrimination. And it does show a really wide net of different types of discrimination from, like, a black man walking down the hall. But also, farther than that, it's about the idea of where that originates in a commonplace scenario. Like, from the white person that's doing the thing and where he's coming from to the black guy, what he's thinking about when he's reacting to something or when he sees a white guy approaching next to him. Or, like, a black guy who is also gay and what's the power dynamics of that. And then a girl who's a black girl, feminist power leader who is the main actress. And her point of view of all this stuff and, you know, black power, but also dating a white guy. It has all these amazing things
mm-hmm.
that are enrolled into some really smart writing with these people that are in Ivy League college. So they're smart themselves. They're in there for a reason, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like writers in their own right. And it's made... This is a show that is based on the movie that really hit in the critical movie that came out a few years before, and which I really recommend, by the way. And it's the... And that's written and directed by Justin Simien, who also directed a lot of these episodes. And if you've seen the movie, this show takes place basically the day after the events of the movie, which is about a white people hosting a blackface party, by the way. So if you're interested in any of this kind of controversy conversation, but told in a smart way, told with really good acting, told with a sense of like... Where will people take you from the day after? It's not just about the event. It isn't just do the right thing. It's what's the day later takes place. What's the week after look like? Then this show is for you. So this is Dear White People. It's on Netflix. I think season two is going to come up. I hope they do because the first season is a lot of setup for all these characters and how they feel about them. And season two, I imagine, will be a continuation or a breakdown. So it's going to be awesome. I recommend it. Watch it.
You had me hooked on that one.
Good. Dear White People. My number 13. Jesus Christ. What is your number two?
It's a Netflix show.
Of course it is. You fucking fuck.
But it's a good one.
Yeah, okay.
Mindhunters.
Ooh, yes.
I fucking love this show.
I'm glad you love it. Not many people love it. Around me.
Oh, okay.
Around me, sorry.
No, it's, I heard it was a David Fincher-produced show.
Yes, he directed like five episodes.
And from what a friend of mine told me was, this would fill in the hole that True Detective left you.
Yes. Yes. That's not a bad... I mean, it's different, but it's not a bad idea. Not a bad way
I
to
took it more as it filled the hole that The Night Of left in me.
Yeah, maybe The Night Of or both, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We can see both. Yeah. Maybe.
I just thought that, like, the writing of the show is just above anything I've seen on Netflix. Because Netflix... I think Netflix shows are consistently just good. They're just, you know, good.
Yeah.
But this is great. And, you know, I fell in love with both the characters, like, within, like, the first episode.
The two main leads.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, like, the cinematography, the dialogue, the writing, subplots. The only character I wasn't a fan of was his girlfriend. I thought that was a waste of film.
He's funny. I heard that same thing, and I really loved her. But I loved her because she's supposed to be a challenge for the main guy. And since we love the main guy, it makes sense that people wouldn't like her. Mm-hmm. But I loved her because she was always challenging him in many ways to the main FBI guy. Anyway.
I can see that. For me, it was just, I felt that, like, I just would rather have that screen time for the other partner.
Or for him going crazy or something.
Yeah. Or, like, him and his
son.
Because
he looks like he's going to be a fucking serial killer by the end of the show.
I'm just really curious in whether they'd take his son.
Because he looks such a Boy Scout in the first one. And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. But also, I like the third member of the little group, the lesbian... psychologist?
Oh, yeah. So I thought it was Cate Blanchett at first because she looks just like fucking Cate Blanchett. But no, she's from Deadwood. She's also from House of Cards. And like
who
a lot
wasn't
of,
in
a
House
ton,
of Cards?
Right, who wasn't?
I was in House of Cards.
But in tons of shit. She's in everything. You were, yeah, I saw you. You had a good bit role. You played that senator from Ohio. Right? No, I mean, she's really, I forget her name, but she's in...
Yeah, she's an American version of her.
Yeah. More Cate Blanchett's Brit?
Yeah, I believe so. She's British or Irish?
Fuck me. I don't know. I thought that she wasn't either. We don't know shit. We just...
she's British because she was in Lords of the Rings.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're okay. Oh, I'm with you. Anyway, yeah. Continue.
I liked her character. I don't think we had enough of her character, in my opinion, but I liked her character a lot. One of my favorite scenes is in episode 7, where they have the tape, and they have to burn the tape. And usually, she's the one who's against, like, the policy... And then for this one scene, it was like a reverse of all the characters betraying themselves. And then she was the only one saying, no, we should do this by the books. What are you guys doing? And like the most like, you know, by the book dick guy is saying, nah, I'm going to turn a blind eye and just burn these.
Right.
I love that scene so much.
You're going to hate me.
What?
No, that's not the person. I confused her with the girl from House of Cards.
So you confused her with two other people.
Molly Parker. It's not Molly Parker. Molly Parker is the girl from House of Cards and Deadwood, the ones I mentioned. Uh-huh. The one that's in a 1922 from this year.
Mm-hmm.
She's great in that movie. But no, the real actress's name is Anna Torv from Fringe. FBI guy from Fringe.
I hate you.
You don't like Fringe?
I've never seen Fringe.
I love Fringe. It's so good. Anyway, but sorry. Now it's all good. No one's going to email me saying I'm fucking an idiot.
No, you're going to get hate mail.
I'm going to get hate mail, yeah.
I'm going to write you a hate mail.
Thank you.
And I love the last episode, like the closing moments of that episode.
Yeah.
Loved it.
It's so good. I agree.
You've seen Mindhunters, right?
I saw the whole thing. I binged it almost. It's one of the very few binge shows I saw.
One of the things that I really enjoyed, because we were never given a straight-up answer... was the opening scene of every episode, the Kentucky scene.
Oh, with the serial killer guy?
Yeah. I took it as two things. One is he's a villain for season 2 or a future season.
Yeah.
Or the second thing is he's a representation of what they're studying.
Oh, you thought it was more like an analogy and it wasn't like a real guy?
I mean,
it could be both.
Yeah,
I think he is real.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
Could we see him and we follow him?
I do think, I'm glad he wasn't resolved right away. I'm glad he wasn't like a killer that just came at the end of season 1 or something.
Which he
like
took care in 25 himself. Minutes.
Right. I'm glad that wasn't it. I'm glad he's going to be like a main threat as far as this behavioral science division starting, you know, what they're going to do.
And I love how, if you look at his first, because he's like in these little pocket openings, I guess you can call them.
Cold opens.
Yeah. In the first cold open, the last one, in between, he has killed people because in the last cold opening, he's burning pictures.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so
we're seeing his process, but we don't see his actual murdering.
Yeah, I love where like, there's a whole like show we never get to see.
Yeah,
It's great.
And it's like, I love that.
Great idea. It's a great idea. I love it. The second I saw it, once I saw him the third time, I was like, oh, I started really piecing it together. Like, we're not going to get this guy's full thing, but he's going to be like a big deal later or something for the
You think that Mindhunters should do a thing where we're giving two shows? We're giving the main show and we're giving this pocket show.
I don't know. If they do it well and stick together thematically, I'm down with anything they got. I just hope they continue this kind of force of nature, like force power of writing and directing. Mm-hmm. As long as they do that, I'm down with whatever they do. Yeah, it's a good show. I'm surprised. I didn't think I would like the show because I'm usually not into period dramas.
Really?
I mean, I love Boardwalk Empire and I love Carnival. Yeah, I do watch them and I do like a lot of them. But overall, I feel like I'm sick of them and they have to be really good. Like, The Crown sucked. I hate The Crown. And that's like kind of the same thing. Fucking hate that show. So, you know.
That stupid Crown looks stupid.
I hate The Crown. I'd rather have a shield. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I'm surprised how much I liked it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my point. So, that's your number, what is that, 2?
Yeah.
My number 12 is an HBO show called Big Little Lies, which I know you haven't seen yet.
No.
Big Little Lies is a, I'm going to read some of this. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Is a brilliant take on ex-husbands and second wives, schoolyard scandal, and the dangerous little lies we tell ourselves just to survive. That's a terrible idea. Why would they IMDb write this? Let me read another one here. The apparently perfect lives of three mothers of first graders unravel to the point of murder. Yeah, so this is it's a strange show because so the show is the starring cast is what attracted me to it, and is created by David E. Kelly. You know who that guy is, right?
Yeah.
He did Ally McBeal and shit. He was a bigger deal in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It stars Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley, Alexander Skarsgård, Zoe Kravitz. Laura Dern is one of the main stars.
Really?
Laura Dern is having the best year of her life with Twin Peaks and this.
And The Last Jedi.
And The Last Jedi. Yeah. She's doing great this year. And Adam Scott is also in this movie. Show, sorry. This
really?
Is HBO. Hire these actors who must have cost like $1 million a pop to come in and do this miniseries. I think they're having season 2, actually, by the way it ended.
Is it an anthology show? Or
No, but it's about this this impending murder that's going to happen from the first opening and some of the other openings, which I didn't like. I don't like the flash forwards of what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you skip all that, that's fine. You know that a murder is going to happen. You don't know exactly who. It's kind of like The Affair. But it tells you at the end of the first season. It kind of solves everything right away. And it's about these women's lives and how what they have to lie about with their own spouses and furthermore with the protection of what they think is their way of life has repercussions with the other people around them or even themselves. And it starts off, for example, like one of the new mothers who's in there was clearly the poorest because this is a fancy fucking uptight and, you know, really rich people place, and she's like, you know, in there for as a poor person.
Mm-hmm.
And her son gets blamed for biting or hitting a little girl, but you know he didn't end up doing it, and it was this whole like it starts from there and it snowballs into this fucking catastrophe when you find out, you know, oh my gosh, she was raped, this you know, the son that she has belongs to someone she's never met before, and all this other shit, and it goes and it culminates into a murder. And the way it's acted and the way it's told by the end is so good. It's like a bottle case.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one case, but it's really good, and there's no cop involvement at all.
Really?
Nope.
That's interesting.
It's all through their wives' perspectives. It's all through them.
Oh, okay.
Only them, and only their dramas and shit. So, and Reese Witherspoon, everyone kills it. Like, she's trying to do, like, an Avenue Q rendition of a play in her school. It's really
what?
And she's having an affair with one of them, and obviously she has to keep that down, and how does that connect with the main, you know, everything connects. It's really good. And it's basically about these women having each other's backs by the end of the show, and it's really cool how it ends. I really liked it.
So we consider
Nicole Kidman kills it, dude.
So it's like a female like heavy show then.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Okay, female. I dig that.
Big Little Lies on HBO. I recommend that. And if it is not a one off, like if they continue the show, I'll love it. But if they don't continue the show, I mean, they managed to pull it off amazingly as a one off. So I'm glad. So that's my number 12. Your number 1.
It's one on a lot of people's number one list, or top 10 list.
I bet it is. I know what's coming. Say it.
Buckle up, boy.
Yep.
It is Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. I thought it was The Mist. The new show, The Mist? No.
Oh. No.
Oh, okay.
It was going to be The Walking Dead, actually. But oh, Game of Thrones was, you know, beat by her an inch.
Right, by an inch. Okay, yeah. Game of Thrones. Season 7?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love this. I feel like I say that a lot.
We all love this. It's a top 10. We're supposed to love them all.
Yeah. Season 7, it closes. It wrapped up so many subplots. And it opened the doorways for so many new ones to kind of come out of it. And the cinematography and the fights, score guy fights, were, I think, the best since the Battle of the Bastards.
Which is only a year before, by the way.
Yeah.
So not like a big sense.
Yeah. But I love the fight scenes with the, especially that two-part episode. It was kind of like the Suicide Squad, where like six of them went out to like the middle of nowhere to hunt down at least one of the White Walkers.
Right. So before we continue, I will say that we'll combine our number ones, because my number 11 is Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay.
Which is to say that, whoa, Oscar, it didn't make your top 10? No, it didn't make my top 10. It almost did. I really wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my number 11 for a reason, but I wish it was higher. I have some problems with it, but I love the season 2. So you were saying, and we'll talk about it.
What was your problems, though, out of curiosity?
So, okay, so the biggest problem, the main plot in this half season or whatever it is.
It's a shorter season, but I think it's still one season.
It's still 8 seasons, right? 8 episodes, I mean, sorry.
Yeah.
Instead of 10. So it's whatever. This 7 seasons, main problem is that the main plot is unforgettable and unbelievable. The idea that I'm going to be convinced that these people have to go get a walker to convince Cersei of all people, the most conniving bitch that won't be convinced of anything if you make the sun into the moon before her eyes, is ridiculous. And I didn't believe a bit of that. So the main plot of them going for this thing, you know, at the risk of Jon Snow and all these people, the Hound, at the risk of killing all of these guys that are awesome and I love them.
You need them. Yeah.
I know. And at the risk for such a stupid idea, such a stupid plan, I couldn't get over it.
Actually, I like that because it shows how like far out the deep end Cersei is.
No, I think I really knew that from seasons ago. I knew that when she took over and burned the fucking Citadel or whatever it was called, you know, with wildfire.
You didn't need more proof.
No, I didn't need no more proof, man. And also, you know. So that's my problem. But they did that amazingly, though. They did the best with it. Like, they had a show of, they had entire episode, what, 2 episodes of them walking or fighting and doing this thing of these characters I never thought would meet, and they meet.
Yeah.
And it becomes the Magnificent Seven of Westeros.
Or Suicide Squad.
Well, Magnificent Seven is better because fuck
this
Suicide
is better
Squad.
Than Suicide Squad.
Well, yeah, Magnificent Seven is more akin to it. So, but they do this amazing thing with Jon Snow suddenly talking to the Hound. I never thought that would happen. I never thought Podrick would talk to this guy. I never thought that. Yeah. It's just so good. And
I never
it becomes
thought we'd
like
see,
a great dialogue.
The Fat King's bastard son again with a warhammer.
We all thought he was, they made that joke in the episode, like, we thought you were still rowing, because that's how they left him.
Yeah. In all fairness, we all thought too.
And I think that the thing is that this season is more popcorn heavy, not just because George R. R. Martin started writing the books and, you know, the D.B., the brothers, I mean, the, not brothers, Weiss and Benioff, are doing their own show, essentially. They're basically fan-servicing their own show.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that they are now in charge of a show that they love from books, and they're making it different because they don't know how the books are anymore. So I feel like we're seeing them writing fan fiction. And it's not bad.
Yeah.
But they're writing fan fiction. And I feel like some of those problems, like that big plot hole I mentioned, is going to be some of that leading into the finality. And I'm not saying I'm not expecting worse, but I'm expecting something different than first season, for example, where it was much more political intrigue and all these connecting characters. Like, because it's different. It's a different feel because they're based on the books.
Well, you could argue that the reason why it's different because these characters have gone through so much.
And they've gone through so much. No, yeah. I'll always be on their side. Game of Thrones, well, I'll probably never not be in my top anything. But the reason so low this time is because, you know, while I do love that 6 seasons worth of shit and character development and all this death and murdering and whatever has happened, yeah, it leads to, like, now they can do the explosive endings. Now they can show all the action. They can show all the dragon stuff because you know these characters already. You know where they stand. You know what they want. You know where they might go, where they might not go. You know if they might succeed or not. And I like that. They're just showing you just climax after climax after climax, right? You know, we see the dragons attacking, and then we see one dragon dying and come back to life, and we see the wall take down. We see a lot of shit going on this one season. And I love how it just payoff after payoff, but at the same time, that big plot hole just could not make it my top 10, and it was such a big problem for me. And also, I do think that some of the writing was a little, It's just, I feel like it's lacking some of that great political intrigue of all these people.
The earlier
dynamics.
Seasons.
Yeah. I feel like it's gone a little bit.
Do you think part of the reason why is because how much shit has just burned down to the ground?
That's true too, man. Maybe they just, all the remixing of trying to fix up plot threads that didn't exist, like the whole thing with the sand snakes, it's all gone now. They just, I knew that the reason that they wrote them off is because they didn't know what to do with them.
I thought it was because the actors all were moving on to their projects.
Probably, but like, either way, they didn't ever, that was the worst stuff, was when Jamie went to rescue, like, remember that whole thing with the sand snakes and the fighting and the prison thing? I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you build up these six characters.
And they suck, by the way. They all suck.
They were built up to be like these amazing warriors.
They
assassins.
They all suck. Right.
And they're taken down by, Theon's uncle in like 2 minutes.
Yeah. And the whole Theon subplot, I like him. I like his redeeming thing, but it's getting tedious too. And I was sick of it by the end.
Yeah, especially when he like abandoned his sister.
Yeah. Oh my God, which I saw coming. I'm like, dude, that sucks. I didn't want to see that. But I get that's his role. I get that. And I want to see him succeed, but
see, the thing is, I thought they could easily fix that by saying, you know, I'll live today and I'll fight tomorrow.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I want him to succeed, I guess, in the end, even though he did. He was an asshole in the first two seasons.
And he still kind of is an asshole?
I mean, no, because he's such a hurt puppy now. I don't, you know, he went from a manger dog to a puppy. He's not going to grow up again. But I don't know. And the thing is, that I'll always be on their side. I want to see the show end and stuff. But I feel like they did do a few missteps in their course correction from the fact they don't have any more books to write from. So I can't wait to see season 8. Hopefully it's better. And I'm sure it will be, which is the end.
Now, with season 8, you know, George R. R. Martin gave him like a treatment of where he wants it to end or how.
Yeah, but like a treatment is not a book. It's not a book. Look, I read the first 5 books, right? Mm-hmm. And like twice, actually. It was really hard because 4 and 5 are hard to watch, or hard to read. And you could tell some of the intricacies they pulled out there to make these characters fit, even if it's a different situation than writing them in. Like, some of that stuff is what makes this show gold. And I feel like a treatment's not going to have that kind of detail.
You think the fact that we're leaving the books is not going to...
I'm not saying it is a bad thing. I'm saying they could make it better maybe than George R. R. Martin could write, because the guy by the 4th and 5th book, like I said, those are the worst books. He was overwriting. He was writing too much. He was explaining things that he didn't even need at all. He was making red herrings for no reason. I mean, red herrings are for no reason. But, like, he was making too many of them.
Yeah.
And now there's too many fucking plots. He was going off the rails, too. I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. I'm just saying that there's whatever time that these filmmakers are doing to course correct the problems of the books to non-books is I think the problems were in this season 7, and hopefully season 8 will be, they'll be fine, and they'll just end it in an amazing way. I hope they do.
How do you want the show to end?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I would like ideally to want either Danny or John to live, but not both. I don't see both living through them all. I'm thinking Danny will, because of, like, maybe he'll magically put a baby in her because he's technically a zombie, so his cum maybe works differently. I don't know. Because she can't have babies, but maybe she can.
Her baby's the first zombie for The Walking Dead.
Right. That's how it starts. I don't know. I'm thinking Danny probably will survive. I want Tyrion to survive, or Arya. Tyrion and Arya are still my favorite characters. But I won't be surprised if they both die.
He has some, like, birth defect because he's incest. He's the next Hodor.
I just want to be satisfied. Yeah, exactly.
I want to be a bittersweet ending.
Yeah, bittersweet was probably what we'll get, honestly. Like not everyone will make it out alive. I want Cersei to die, hopefully.
I want to have a really painful fucking death.
I want her to die really slowly.
I want her to be on flames.
Yeah, or something. On flames? In flames? Yeah,
both.
Okay. On and
I want her to be inside a dragon where he fucking lets his mouth open.
Yeah, that's awful. Okay.
But I just want to say that fan theory. Do you think Bran is the Night King?
Oh,
because there is that one thing where
he has no emotion. He's no longer Bran and all that shit, right? Which I didn't like that. I wish they kept Bran.
You mean autistic Bran?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want him to be a sick Bran, but I want Bran to be there. I like Bran. I don't like this new non-Bran.
It has something to do with him constantly going into the Eye of the Raven.
I get it. And I hope the information he comes out of, actually, he's able to tell people or convince them, or like, how is he going to convince people about Jon Snow's lineage? I hope that's important. I hope he does something about that, because he's the only one that knows, that has proof, even though his proof is only for himself, like no one else could.
Yeah,
see. I don't know how it works. Maybe he can.
I don't think it'll be known.
Maybe he can make a 3-way call to that history flashback episode. I don't know, but I hope it. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I hope it works well. But as far as that theory, I don't really like that theory.
Do you think we need to know the Night King's like motivations and his
history? No, I think they're meant to be like just a pure evil, which I don't like also because the whole idea of Game of Thrones is
no one is pure evil.
Right, that's the whole thing. We're living in a sea of gray, and no one's going to live or die the way you want, and it's not Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, so
it's supposed to be the anti-Lord of the Rings fantasy mm-hmm. series, and it's kind of doing that by, you know, it's kind of like going with
everybody's kind of a gray character.
But I hope we do find out, like, a history about them that makes them, we need to see them in a different light, but also, like, they are still the evil force that wants to kill everyone, as far as we know, so I don't know if we're going to get any more. But I just hope it ends. I just want a smile on my face. And okay. Even if it's a bitter smile, I want that smile. I don't know what it is. So I don't want to have too many anticipations because if I say I'll hate the show if Danny dies, I can't say that. That's mm-hmm. not fair. So I can't. I don't want to be specific. You know, how can I be?
Yeah.
I guess I want Cersei to die for sure. I guess that's one thing I want. But yeah. Well, do you have anything?
I just really want an origin for the. The Night King. I think we need.
Man, you're gonna hold your breath on that one.
Yeah, I don't the thing know. Is, like we mentioned, you know, every character's a great
aim
character.
Small, man, aim small. Have a smaller tree.
But I just feel like. But the thing again, though, is I'll be really pissed if he somehow is Bran from a different timeline or some fucking Terminator Genisys bullshit.
Genisys.
Yeah.
Nice. That's what I called it too.
But I think because the thing it just doesn't make sense for him like not to have. Like something, or at least like a reference, like have like Jon Snow's best friend read a book where it referenced, you know, like the Night King's, you know, implies
book.
Yeah, implies this.
Okay. I don't know.
Because the thing is, I won't be happy if he's just meant to be a purely evil thing who just wants to rule everything. Because then, like, I wonder what's his end game? We don't know that. What's his fucking end game?
To make the world cold? That's it. He doesn't want.
Wait, Mr. Freeze?
Yeah.
What fucking? They give him puns then.
Everyone just chew. Yeah, that's all he wants. I mean, what else could he want? He wants to make everyone his bitch. He wants everyone to be.
But why?
Because he maybe I don't know. Because he likes the cold.
Because to me, people say, "Oh,
I mean, I think it's probably something simple like man in the old like the Andals, right? That's what they called the original men who created the wall. Maybe they fucked up on some big. Agreement to the race of these White Walkers, and he's just taking their vengeance back. He was patient to wait like 3,000 years to do it, and now he's doing it, and that's all he wants. Maybe he's supposed to. Maybe his magic dies when he finishes his spell-driven quest. I don't know, but that's probably the closest I can think of to an answer. Because we don't know. And honestly, if the show is going to tell us how or why the whys of that guy... they better do a really good job of it because I don't see how they can do a good job without looking like they're just explaining themselves. So I hope they do a good job. But if they don't, then that's fine. Like, an evil villain could just be an evil villain.
What
it could be a meteor. It could be like the meteor coming to crash on Earth. You don't need to explain why the meteor is coming to Earth. You just got to stop it, right?
Yeah, but meteor isn't like...
You don't know that shit. You don't know what's in a meteor's head.
It doesn't have a personality like the Night King does.
You don't know shit. You know... Well, I mean, does the Night King have a personality? I mean, he seems to have a little bit of humor sometimes when the way he gloats.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the most I've seen of him having a personality. And it's not like he creates a child walker and loves him. I don't see any of that. I don't see any love in there. I don't see any connection other than him creating it, right? So I feel like if he's going to be stone cold all the time, then be stone cold.
He has more connection with his fellow generals than just with the walkers.
No, I think because he needs them. Because if you destroy one of the generals,
whoever
the generals control, they all die too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's just a big loss for the war effort than it is like a friend dying.
Okay, like it's like the accountability.
I'm explaining a lot that I don't really know for sure. I mean, this is it's not. I just don't have any evidence to really support my idea, but I feel like it's true.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. We're just talking a lot about Game of Thrones right now.
Yeah, here we
go. I think that's it. That's your top 10
yes.
TV shows of 2017. You said you're not as happy as last year, but did you enjoy this year for TV overall? Like, is this a good list for you? You like them?
My list, yeah, but there's just I definitely had a few disappointments.
Okay, so give me your disappointments.
One would be Shameless.
Right, which is your number 10 last year, I believe.
Yeah.
How come? And briefly.
Pretty much, it really came down to the fact that, you know, a lot of what we're seeing in this season is just repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I feel like a lot of, like, story arcs and motivation and angles are, like, season 3. Not season fucking 7.
Yeah. Okay.
What you know what I'm saying? It's like this should have happened earlier.
Well, you know, once you write so many fucking character problems, and you gotta come back to them at some point, I guess.
And also, it's just like we revisit certain things that, like, didn't we deal with this before? Like Ian's bipolar disorder. How often can you deal with his bipolar disorder before we just get numb to it?
Yeah, I didn't know he had that. Did I know that? Maybe I did.
And also, like, certain characters, like, they get older every season by a year.
Right.
Why are they acting this way sometimes? This is up for season two. They should have acted.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, that happens with old-ass shows, too. You start seeing the bigger picture. I'm like, wait a second. Didn't we go through this whole fucking thing already?
Yeah, like...
Aren't you supposed to be more mature?
You went through a whole arc about growing up. Yeah. And what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
And now certain characters betray themselves, almost. Like, Fiona pretty much becomes like this, like, I'm going to get a real estate scheme, make millions of dollars. And, like,
oh, okay.
You would think she'd be more humble, you know, growing up poor and stuff.
Oh, then
and now she became Hackman from Superman 2.
I don't remember that at all.
It just pretty much she buys a apartment building and she like rents out to people, specifically to hipsters and upcomers, and kind of neglects like the South Side's true history, you know, of like, you know, the people of the city.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, dude, like, this isn't you.
Do you have any other disappointments?
Doctor Who.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, off air, I think. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Disappointments. Not just those two, the biggest ones, because I held them to high regard the previous year. That's why.
Okay. What about shows that you missed on that you wish you caught?
Oh, man. I really wish I would have saw season two of Search Party.
Fuck, I don't even know what that is.
It's like a, imagine like a sitcom with elements of film noir.
Fuck, I'm sold already. Where is it on?
TBS.
TBS.
Yeah.
TBS. Jesus. It's like the USA of shows. Like, USA has Mr. Robot. That's the only reason I watch USA.
Well, that's the TBS. That's their Mr. Robot.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And it's like, it sucks TBS. Because the promos kind of spoils.
Yeah.
Like, because the promos are all over fucking Facebook, too. Holy shit.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
I don't
know. Especially if you follow, like, the site, like, if you like it, you get bombarded.
like anything once, right?
Yeah.
I don't go on Facebook much, so even if I did, I'm sure I wouldn't have seen it. Anything else that you missed on that you wish you saw?
Again, I wish I saw Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, well, yeah, for sure.
I had a lot
it's depressing,
of
but yeah.
Tell me that.
I mean, you should see Master of None for sure. You mentioned that one.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, again,
fucking watch it, dude.
I'll see the promos. I just never. Fucking
I think you know, as far as like as themes for the because you know some of these shows there's some shows movies too, but we're just doing shows right now. Some of these shows are. You know, you think of what's representative of 2017. You know, 2017's biggest news thing is Trump.
Yeah.
Trump's fucking campaign. Trump's first year as president. All the follies, all the fuck-ups, all the lies, all the Twitter, all the Fox News. And we think of, like, that compared to some of the other controversies that we're in on with, you know, with Kevin Spacey and shit like that. We think of all this stuff. I think what represents a year that's full of that? And you think of Master of None does that a little bit, like I mentioned earlier, for reasons. But inadvertently, it does that. Mm-hmm. And then you have one that does it on purpose, which is American Horror Story. American Horror Story had a cult, the season for cult.
And the cult was pro, I guess, alt-right?
But, well, the thing is that it takes place, this guy creates basically a cult based on Trump winning the election. Mm-hmm. And... the main guy who writes it, I forget his name, he started writing episodes from that moment on, from November, whatever it was, last year, to represent...
Oh, yeah, Ryan Murphy.
Ryan Murphy, thank you. To represent this one man who is going crazy and makes a cult of these people and makes an alt-right thing. There's a thematic thing about past cults like Charlie Manson. They do a Charlie Manson episode. They do the... David Koresh episode with the Kool-Aid or whatever that guy is. And they do, you know...
Jim Jones?
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Jones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Jim Jones.
Yeah, and they do some of the stuff, and some of the stuff really works. They do that whole thing about Valerie Solanas, the girl who shot and killed that one famous guy from the 60s. Doesn't matter. The point is that some of the stuff really worked, some of the stuff didn't, and it's obviously all over the top. He overwrites, his flashbacks have flashbacks. The guy's obsessed with flashbacks.
What?
Have you seen AHS, American Horror Story?
I've seen it up until season 4, then I've given up on the show.
So I've given up on every season of every show. I've seen first three episodes of the first three episodes of the second, missed the third completely, saw some of the Freak Show, like half of the Freak Show, skipped all the rest. And the only reason I saw Cult is because a friend of mine who I admire recommended it really highly and said this is the only time this show works because this over-the-top aspect of representing this whole Trump era, it makes sense because Trump is over-the-top. So it's kind of realistic. And he's right. And the show is clearly the best season they've ever had because of how over the top they're supposed to be, but still kind of written kind of poorly sometimes, so it doesn't make my top 20. But it's that's representative of the year. Do you have anything like that that you can think of in TV
that represents the year?
Yeah, a lot of the, yeah, or the feel of the year maybe, or what people should be feeling maybe. I know it's a hard question. I didn't give you any time to think about it.
Oh man, I'm trying to think.
Homeland, like I said, Homeland, when I mentioned that, that kind of represents the year for me too. It's kind of like a big what if.
Yeah, kind of a... I'm trying to think what encompasses the year.
Right, yeah, it's kind of hard. If we're talking about movies, I could have more answers. But
yeah, but shows, that's a, especially because I think it's still early.
Yeah.
I think shows are being written now. We'll have a lot of,
Fact that Sense8 was canceled represents a lot of the year's problems, because Sense8, it's all about, like, connecting. It's all about community. It's literally about all the great things we should be focusing on.
And then
be
canceled.
Being canceled. Like, fuck. Yeah.
So that itself kind of represents right, the year. Yeah. A show being canceled.
I love that show so much. I want everyone to watch it. Anyway. So, what about, best, let's say actor. I'm not saying Golden Globes worthy, but let's say, well, what's your favorite actor of the year? Performance or something?
Oh, I have one more for miss out, actually. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, The Runaways, because this is the first MCU TV show, Marvel show, I haven't seen.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what do you think for acting?
Huh?
Best actor.
Best actor?
Or actress, doesn't matter.
Actress.
Or piece of acting. It doesn't have to be so specific. Like, I like, what's his name?
The lead for Legion.
Oh, dude, that guy's amazing. From Downton Abbey.
Yeah, yeah.
And from The Guest.
Yes.
Right?
And also he did a film recently, too. Marshall.
Marshall. Was it the dog movie?
No, it's a movie. It's starring the guy from Black Panther.
Blanther.
Yeah. He's in Marshall. I think he plays a racist white guy.
Okay.
Of course.
Who is this guy's name? I'm looking for him. Oh, Jude Law. He was in The Young Pope. The Young Pope is great. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but I heard great things
about it. It's like perfect trash.
Really?
And it's made by the guy who, Paolo Sorrentino, the guy who fucking did that big movie that made a lot of money. It's called The Great Beauty. He did that movie, The Great Beauty, and also Youth, which I saw also. And that movie is fucking bonkers, but Jude Law kills it in that show for sure.
Okay.
That's a one-off, I think. I think there might be a second season, but I'm not 100%. You know, Better Call Saul still has, like, some of the best acting, in my opinion.
Yeah, that show is just made for the Golden Globes.
There's a lot of anthology series, too. Did you see Room 104? Did some pretty good one-offs
I've seen
some of those actors. It's an HBO show about, like, the whole, every episode takes place. Every episode is written directed by different people. They're all different genres. But it all takes place in the same hotel room.
Oh, okay.
And that's the only gimmick.
Okay.
So that's hard to talk about, but I guess that makes sense. Like I said, all the cast of Big Little Lies killed it. I think all
you have me hooked on that show.
All the awards should just go to them, honestly.
I would say John Berthel in Punisher.
I heard he's amazing.
Holy shit, man. Like,
yeah, I heard he's great.
Yeah.
He's really good in the bit movie season, too.
Yeah.
I love them in Sicario. I love them in all his little roles he's in.
Mm-hmm.
He was you see the Wind River movie?
No, but I heard great things about it.
Oh, he's in that. Yeah. In one scene, but he kills in that scene. He's
even in his bad movies, he's like the best part in those bad films.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I'm amazed how he doesn't get like movie roles.
I think he will. I think he's going to be a big star. I think they're gearing him up to be a big star soon.
Okay.
He hasn't made a bit misstep yet.
I can see the actors from Twin Peaks cleaning a bunch of award shows.
I hope they do, but I don't think they will.
You don't think so?
I mean, I would love them to do it because Kyle MacLachlan is playing three different characters.
Yes.
He's played three fucking characters.
And they're great.
And they're all amazingly different and complex. One is super dark, one is super light, one is super, like, mentally weird. And he's so good. Laura Dern, you get it. And fucking Gordon Cole, whoever plays him, Dave Lynch.
Yeah.
Everyone's so good in that show. Naomi Watts, I think, should get it. I don't know, man. That show's amazing. I don't think I'd get anything. But for me, you know, the acting from The Leftovers, I feel like it's a big one, too. But yeah. What about you have a really bad episode that you hated?
Bad episode,
just one
that
episode,
I hated.
Like a one-off.
It's a bit kind of cliche to say, but that episode 7 from Stranger Things.
Is that the one where they just follow L?
Yeah.
See, a lot of people didn't like that, but I liked that episode a lot. Huh.
It just like
no.
It should have been saved for like season 3, in my opinion.
No, I mean, well, it took place between
then
how is she gonna get back?
Mm-hmm, that's
but
true.
I like that they focused on her, but I understand people didn't like it so much. Yeah, I can't think of anything right now, but I think we've talked enough about the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that is our top 10, my top my 11 through 20, but your top 10 TV shows of 2017. Let's wrap it up here. Marcos, thanks a lot for coming in to guest host with me. I think I've decided, since this is a long show, and we'll, top 10s are always long, I'm going to make this a two-parter. So I'm going to release this first, and then do the one with Rolf and release it like a week later or a day later. It's two separate shows. So since you're part of my finale, why don't you give people, again, where they can find you on the internet, and then we'll exit the show.
Yeah, you can find me on my Twitter account, Less Than 10 Superman, Marco Chavez. You can also follow me and my writing at the GameOfNerds.com.
Sweet. Yeah, and I won't give you mine except to say that Armin Filmmaker is my Twitter account, as you well know. And tune in next week or a few days from this point to listen to my my top 10 for real and Roth's top 10 TV shows of the year to cap TV for 2017. And then after that, we'll carry on with our top 10 discoveries of 2017 and end our top 10 finale with the movies of 2017. So until then, everyone, have a... Well, by the time this comes out, it'll be after New Year's. So hopefully you're having a great fucking New Year. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. What the hell was that?
Too, so I've been, like, really into Bosch.
Okay.
But that's like it's like a regular detective show that you've seen 1,000 times, but it's done really well. So okay. It doesn't have any big, doesn't have a new way to make the formula or anything. It just does it really well.
Okay. So, it's like, if it ain't broken, why fix it?
Kind of like that, but it's really well acted, super, super well acted, and it's focused on character than plot, and there is a plot, of course. Mm-hmm. Killers and shit and people after him.
Disappointment can't put in Louis.
I never saw Louis. I'm 3 seasons behind on Louis.
Oh, so. Okay. I mean, I'm disappointed both in the show and the real life Louis.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in the real life Louis for sure, because like, his material spoke to me, and then when that came out, I'm like, man, God.
You know the fucked up thing? He has a few episodes where he's on dates, and looking back, he is kind of like
a little fucked up.
Yeah, especially when he refuses to let the girl out of his doorway until he gets a kiss.
I don't remember. It's been a while.
There's an episode where like he refuses her to leave until he kisses her.
You're talking about the Ukrainian girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like, he pretty much, like...
I like that. I thought that was wonderful. Now I don't think it's wonderful.
Yeah, because like, it's kind of rapey now. Especially him masturbating. Remember the episode where he told a woman, I'm a masturbate about you, and there's nothing you can do about it. It was funny. Looking back, it's like, oh, he did that in real life.
Yeah.
He masturbated in front of people. Well, technically, it's not rape, right? Because he never actually touched them.
No, it's not rape. It's not anywhere near that bad compared to everyone
else. It's a decent exposure. Oscar Isaac is problematic, though, because he doesn't speak Spanish and have his interviews. Or doesn't bring about his Guatemalan heritage. It's like, well, he's promoting Star Wars.
Wasn't he born here?
Huh? He was born here, but he was raised a few years with his grandparents.
Okay, I mean, I know Spanish, but I'm not going to see Spanish in an interview.
Yeah, and also, it's like, I'm not gonna do it. Why would he bring about a race card in every single interview?
Right. That's ridiculous. Oscar Isaac. Leave him alone. The guy, basically, and he did it like the opposite way. He did it like Aziz Ansari. Like, he became famous from acting in roles that were not geared toward Hispanics.
Yeah, it's like the villain for Sucker Punch.
And in Drive, he was like just a guy who came out of prison. It wasn't even about his heritage. He was dating a white girl, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
And then, what was the other one? Ex Machina. He played a rich guy who was like the Mark Zuckerberg of that world.
A violent year?
That one too. He played like a weird gangster Italian type.
Yeah.
He didn't start out by starring in American Me and Mi Familia and shit.
Do you think that actually handicaps an actor?
It can. But I don't know. But not for everyone. Like, some people it works for, some people it doesn't. And it probably wouldn't for Oscar Isaac.
Because he's so good.
Because some people it worked for, like, you know, I mean, James Olmos, the guy?
Yeah.
Like, I know he was in Blade Runner, but he also did do the American Me's and shit.
Yeah, and also,
you know, and Selena and shit.
Yeah, there you go. And also, for him, I think his career is even now because he got fat real quick.
Yeah.
He blew up, like, because he was built in those first two films, and now he's like...
Yeah. Well, he's fucking old, man.
But even back when he was so younger, he was still overweight.
In the 80s, he was still older than I am today.
He's an old fuck.
He looks really old. He looks older than I do in Blade Runner, and that's 1982. So, yeah.
In all fairness, he just has an ugly face. That could be it. He just does not have a good
trait. He does have a Danny Trejo-looking face.
Yeah, even when he was young, he looked old.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Poor bat. It's like Steve Buscemi. He's like the Mexican Steve Buscemi. He just always will look ugly.
Fun fact, you know a 5-year-old Steve Buscemi looks the same as a 21-year-old Angelina Jolie?
No.
Yeah.
How is that a fun fact? Where is the fun in that fact, first of all? And how is that a fact?
Well, whenever you look at Angelina Jolie, you know, oh man, she's really hot, you're technically saying a young Steve Buscemi is like a pre-pubescent Steve Buscemi.
Are you saying he had those big lips?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like those fuckable lips, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you want to see that what you said?
No, I don't. Don't show me. I don't want to see it. No.
Okay.
There's many things in this world, you know?
From the history books. And some people are saying, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, what you saying? Like,
is
me,
Hitler blurred from the history books?
Exactly. Like, for
what
me,
the fuck does that mean? He was a painter before he killed people.
Yeah. I think that, you know, people say who's foreign your favorite wrestlers.
Do you think in 1939 when he was coming to power and being famous for that, do you think there was like a big fan of Hitler paintings? He's like, dude, you hear about Hitler? That guy, like, oh, I love his paintings. Like, yeah, you know, he's fucking crazy. He's killing those people. Fuck, now I gotta burn his paintings. It's like,
I've spent 40 euros on them.
Right. Yeah, it's awful.
But
like,
yeah, like,
but it's the same thing when you think about it.
I like Donald Trump's character, like his subverged version of his character on WWE. I think he's great. I can see why he's in the Hall of Fame in pro wrestling.
See that bear? That's a Trump bear.
Oh my god, I love it.
Just,
yeah, like people have yelled at me, you know, wearing a WrestleMania 23 T-shirt because he's on the shirt.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like it. I like the character. He portrays like a higher, campy version of himself on WWE TV.
Yeah,
I mean, like, it's been done. Like, he's on my shirt. I'm not gonna burn my shirt to make you happy.
Yeah.